bumper stickers, palms sweating as they stand in line to vote for candidates they sincerely believe in. It's rather, well, like the parable of the man continuously rolling the rock up the hill only to have it constantly roll back down again. You know, well, all in all, it's worth some laughs, really, of course. And that's not bad, is it? I mean, after all, humor is a necessary ingredient for maintaining one's overall good health and physical well-being, even for us in the ruling class.
How much would you estimate that you and the rest of the ruling class spend buying the average presidential election?
It's hard to say exactly, but it's been estimated at around 200 trillion, I think.
Well, this begs the question, if it's that expensive, and God knows it certainly must be a lot of trouble to arrange such a national extravaganza every 4 years.
Well, it requires a certain amount of effort, yeah.
Then why go through the charade of having these elections? Why not just do away with them?
It is a nuisance, I agree, but a necessary one. You see, it gives you in the lower classes a reason to live. It justifies your faith, sustains your continued belief in the system.
Explain what you mean by the system.
The system which we set up, wherein we rule and you serve us. You see, a long time ago, my great-grandfather, I hate to keep bringing him up, but he really was a remarkable man. Got the idea that a system of high prices for consumer goods and low wages for the workers who produce those goods could sustain itself if you could instill among the workers the ridiculous illusion that somehow such a system worked for them. You see, the democratic process. That name, of course, was our invention. It's a necessary tool. Nothing more than leisure domain. Pure sleight of hand, but a necessary tool nonetheless.
But now there's a lot of talk these days about the free trade agreements, and a lot of people are saying that, well, GATT and NAFTA, you guys in the ruling class have gone just a little too far this time, that free trade is nothing more than a power play, a greedy, bald-faced attempt to set yourselves up as the ultimate power on the planet, as Kipling-esque kings over the entire Earth. How would you react to that?
Would you please repeat the question?
Is NAFTA a power play? And what are you going to do about the millions who will be homeless and unemployed once their jobs have left the country?
Ah, unemployed workers. I'm glad you brought that up. You see, we here in America must exercise a predisposition toward adjustment to flux in prevailing market and economic trends, gradually realigning the workforce in the direction of optimum free trade demands.
And translated into English, that means...
We'll give them all jobs as prison guards, I suppose.
Well, we promised the folks in the audience and the folks at home a candid interview today with J. Carlisle Rockamorgan, and that certainly is what we're getting. One final question, Mr. Rockamorgan. Candidly, do poor people have just as much right to live as rich people?
Of course not, Sally.
Well, there you have it. I want to thank you for being with us today. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. J. Carlisle Rockamorgan.
Well, I certainly wish we had Mr. Rockamorgan here. I could show him my opinion of that particular perspective. Instead, I'm stuck with the relatively low-scale, but certainly well-begarbed Shahs. Shahs, you're coming not only armed with your customary hat, watch, and, of course, collection of fidgets, and for those who don't know what fidgets are, they're bizarre little devices that you can play with while attempting to overcome the frustrations of a day of low wages and high rents, if that helps. I guess, anyway, Shahs, you're doing your bit to help sublimate that energy which could otherwise, say, lead to revolution?
Indeed, I guess you could put it that way, and you did. I come to you today with a tape that's about 45 minutes old. If any of you are familiar with Shanalini of Feed the People, you may know that just a few days ago on Tuesday, 2 days ago, he was arrested and taken to jail for refusing to sign a ticket for conduct in public. I believe it's section 95060 or something like that.
9.50.020, conduct on public property.
Indeed, the conduct that Sean was guilty of course, was having his foot on the planter downtown. And then...
Let me explain what a planter is, Shahs. A planter, we're not talking about sticking your foot, let's say, in the middle of a green area and crushing the gentle flowers underfoot, though some of us would have liked to do that to the flowers planted along the fences designed to drive away people sitting there. No, we're talking about the kind of low 1.5-2 inch high cement walls that surround some of the trees and some of the other objects downtown on Pacific Avenue, which often people sit down on, sometimes put their foot on, sometimes stand on.
Walk around, they could walk around it, balance on it, you know, people do everything on there. So.
Fidget in a certain sense, right?
One could say.
And so in essence, the Pacific Avenue's own contribution to the fidgeting needs of the American, or at least the Santa Cruz public.
Well, you know, it's a surface that, you know, tends to be explored because it's close to the area of one traversing with their feet. So to go on with the story here a little bit, Sean had had an encounter with the health department about whether or not it was okay to serve food there. He had spoken with the health department officer. I was there during that time, but I only had a t-shirt, so I needed to retreat prior to getting cold. And as I left, the police came up and started talking to Sean, and it turned out that they wanted to write him this ticket, which I understand he refused to sign. The status at this point, I don't know, but what I do know is that the ticket was for having his foot up on the planter. Now,
before you go on, and let me, because I know this, I want to kind of build up to this a bit, Shaz. This is one of the offenses that actually predates the infamous downtown ordinances, which include the sitting ban, the spare changing ban, tabling ban in front of cafes, nighttime demonstration ban if you have a table or any other object on the sidewalk. The laws passed by the Downtown Association in collusion with Neil Coonerty, Scott Kennedy, Cynthia Matthews, and others of the Downtown Association group. They're now running Linda Steinau for re-election, although he's been keeping an eye on this. Now, this ordinance, 9.50.020, is an old ordinance used by police, in essence, to harass individuals that they don't like the look of on the mall. It's not entirely true that they can harass them without any cause, but the cause can be very minor. And so, for instance, if you are sitting, let us say, on the statue of Tom Scribner, which is, of course, the statue near the bookshop Santa Cruz, a picture of the infamous musical saw player who lived in the St. George Hotel before the earthquake. He was a wobbly and a communist, and he was he got to be very an old man before he died, a fighter for workers' rights, a speaker on issues of social import, and he was considered kind of a famous guy. So they designed a statue of him, and it actually has a flat area where weary people, presumably, people who want to make a point about this or that can sit. I, in fact, stood on that statue during numerous demonstrations and spoke to a crowd of people about the sleeping ban and the need to change that Santa Cruz law. Well, Shaz, I remember one of our early encounters was when you were, in fact, ticketed. Indeed, you may have even been arrested, I'm not sure. No, not arrested, but ticketed for sitting on the statue of Tom Scribner, which is, again, at waist height. It's flat. It would seem a reasonable place to sit. And indeed, I think you can find tourists sitting there every so often. But you, scruffy dog that you are, and you are a man of, let's put it this way, you don't have your Birkenstocks with you, and I would say that your clothes are not exactly designer label. They look bottom drawer, to be charitable. You got a ticket for sitting on the statue, and you took it to court. I remember because I was there trying to assist you, as was Tom Noddy, the bubble man and a man who designed the street performers' guidelines. You, of course, failed to convince a Mad Dog Mulligan, as we call him, or I should say Meat Grinder Mulligan, that this statue was customarily used for that purpose, as it had, in fact, been the subject of people sitting there. Merchants and workers from a nearby area testified they had sat there and seen you sitting there, and there was no problem. In fact, the entire downtown area was redesigned because everybody used to sit all over the place on beautiful red brick planters that lined the downtown area. But when the earthquake created the commotion downtown, this became the pretext to destroy that entire area and turn it into the kind of stark, straight boulevard we have now. Anyway, I tend to go on. I apologize, Shaz. We're talking about Sean Alini and what happened with him. He's been arrested not merely down on the avenue for putting his foot on the rise of a planter and refusing to remove it when a police officer asked him to do so. And that, of course, is the key point in our next segment. But he also, of course, was arrested for walking into a courtroom and sitting down on Friday, which I will go into at greater length. And he has been harassed by the health department. We're talking about shit-kicker Sean Alini, as I call him, who has been feeding people peanut butter Jelly and Love Sandwiches down on Pacific Avenue every Monday and Tuesday at 5:30 in front of Double Rainbow, in case you want to check them out. But finally, I'm going to return to your crucial tape, which we're about to play here. You have noted that Sean Alimi got a ticket for putting his foot on the planter. In essence, of course, it was simply they were looking for something to intimidate young people for, and the young people who can use Sean Alimi's meal. And we say this not, I guess I say this because of their behavior generally around the meal, the Feed the People meal, Feed the People peanut butter and jelly sandwich affair. Sean, in standing up for his rights, put his foot on the planter and kept it there, engaging in reasonable behavior. I'm sure many people customarily do put their feet on those planters. And it's not like they're causing any damage. They don't do any damage. It's not like they're acting in a bizarre fashion. It's quite a natural thing to do. But it was the pretext for the police officers to show their power and authority. And Sean Alimi, in essence, said, you're not going to harass me. You're not going to harass me that way. And they took him handcuffed him, took him to jail. He refused to sign his ticket. And he was shortly released. Apparently the bailiffs or the deputies at jail found it quite a laugh, because they thought it was kind of a pointless ticket, which it was. But today, having gone through all that verbiage, why don't you take over, Sean?
All right. Just to give you a basic idea of what has transpired, being aware of this having happened to Sean and me understanding that it's a common practice, much like sitting on the Tom Scribner statue was for me, I'm keeping my eye out for people with their foot on the planter. Just, tabulating the effects of that. And if I have one shortcoming in all of this, is that it's hard for me to maintain emotional stability when I see things going on that are just sick, wrong, and a double standard and a horrible enforcement mechanism. For instance, when I was sitting on the statue of Tom Scribner, there was no injured party, nobody's getting hurt. I'm sitting there, I'm drinking a cup of coffee, got my headphones on, and minding my own business. Now, Sean's case, he was involved in a political activism type of endeavor, and them not being able to enforce any regulation or rule in regard to his feeding exercises, because he had dealt with the health department in somewhat of a manner that afternoon, of which I hold audio. After I left, he ended up being arrested. Now, my understanding is that they handcuffed him for this offense, and with a crowd of about 20 people interested in seeing what happened and hearing what went on and witnessing the occurrence, he was actually taken into the downtown host's office and locked in there with the police officers, everyone else being held out, that being the point of intimidation and whatnot that they're able to do. Now, what I have for you today is a tape that basically I got about 45, 50 minutes ago. Walking down the mall, I happened to notice two of Santa Cruz's finest standing, chatting with other people, each of the officers having their foot on the planter, the same crime that Sean Alimi is accused of, and such, it being a case of double standard and double enforcement. Clearly, having your foot on the planter is not a crime, and it's not the sort of thing that anyone of conscience would not want to do, because it doesn't hurt anyone. So I'm going
to
go ahead and...
It's kind of comfortable to do, too. I mean, the planter is a slight rise of about 2 inches. It's a cement sort of surface. It's something you might do as you're standing, talking to a friend. You might kind of have 1 foot on the pavement, 1 foot, 2.5 inches above it on the planter. But it's not even a planter. It's a cement rise that kind of surrounds a tree.
It's a curb.
It's kind of like a curb, yeah, around the little trees and flowers. And to indicate that that's somehow illegal indicates a strange philosophy, until you realize that what they really are working at is essentially dispersing associations of people in violation of the First Amendment, I might add, that they don't like downtown. This is a pretext for doing that.
Exactly. And so what I witnessed as I walked down one side of the Pacific Garden Mall was these two officers. So I, not wanting to jaywalk to approach the officers, went to the nearest corner, crossed across the street, walked up with my tape recorder rolling. It's not a very good tape because it was taping through my bag, but it is intelligible. And I confronted the officers about them having their foot on the curb. And again, I have to say, my one drawback is that I have a hard time maintaining emotional stability in the face of nonsense. And so, that's probably what did me in the Tom Scribner issue as I was in court dealing with this nonsense. I lost my emotional composure because, again, I had not hurt anyone, and I have paid in excess of $500 worth of fines in Santa Cruz in the 2 years I've been here without an injured party. I've been hauled into court, I've been harassed by the police, and I'm just tired of it, and it's hard to maintain personal composure. So let's go ahead and play this tape. It runs just a couple minutes with a brief explanation afterwards. It should be queued up there, and here we go with my tape.
Gentlemen, what's up, John? When you pick it up, Ben, you put on a plan. I never told you yet because you're still on the planner. I would like to know how can this take the ones who stand over the field with your feet on the planner. And I'm recording the response. No response. Welcome to your officer, back number 148. Put on the planner.
If you want my card, you can have it.
Gentlemen, I am on the 445.
So now one of the things I mentioned in that, which I brought a little material on, is a website and a service available for those of us that are having trouble with the police. It's a new service on the internet. They've been around some period of time. It's called policeabuse.com. And they're certainly worthy of a plug here. I hold their 11-page entire website in my hand and give out their 800 number. It's 1-800-681-1874. That's the Police Complaint Center. And one thing that I wanted to give you here, there's several things that they've been able to accomplish over the last few years. They go out and they investigate undercover with officers, and they do the conduct that people have been saying they've been abused of. And as a result of their investigations, officers have been forced to retire, and state law in California was actually amended. After viewing video of hidden camera investigations of policeabuse.com, the Beverly Hills Police Department and the California Legislature sponsored new bills increasing the penalty for lying on police reports from a misdemeanor to a felony. That's California SB 2681. And every officer in the state is now required to undergo racial sensitivity training. One other thing I wanted to get here, and Bathrobe wants the mic, and I'll give it to him here. There's a little list of suggestions that people should use to protect themselves, victims of misconduct. You should always file a complaint of misconduct if you feel that you've been subject to ill treatment by a police officer. This applies even when no physical abuse is involved. All complaints should be made in writing. Preferably, complaints should be sent certified mail to the chief of police.
Slow down. We're going to actually go through these, and I think they are very important things to say. But I wanted to make a couple comments, Shaws. I know you're... Don't worry. The mic will be returning to you. Yeah, there's a phone number here in the studio. If you've had problems with the police or if you have questions about your rights, as far as we can understand them, we're not attorneys here or, you know, necessarily specially skilled in giving legal advice, but we have had experience around some Santa Cruz laws, and we have had experience dealing with police officers here in Santa Cruz on the streets. Phone number here is 427-3772. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz you're listening to, 96.3 FM, 427-3772. You can call in. Perhaps you feel that what we're talking about is...
Poppycock.
Indeed, poppycock, balderdash, whatever you think it is, let's hear your opinion. Don't just let us sound off and fill the airwaves with our thoughts. Let's hear what you have to say. Yeah, this idea of, I'm glad to see that the police are getting racially trained. Of course, we have the, Driving While Black, DWB citations that are, of course, becoming famous in some areas, even in the county. We had a woman claiming, Wanda, that she was multiply stopped by police. She's a black woman up in the Felton area repeatedly, and her case is being taken by Attorney Kate Wells regarding the Canfield Seaside Company eviction of her and separation of her from her child for allegedly criticizing the Ku Klux Klan and annoying one of the Canfield Security Goon Squad, let us say security guards, if you want to be officious about it. And she's hopefully going to be giving us more information on that case in the future. The particulars of this 9.50.020 thing, which is, of course, a trivial ordinance which police officers essentially use to intimidate young people. They say, you can't put your foot there. Now, it's actually, you're given a warning on this ordinance, and you're given a warning on the sitting ordinance. I don't think Conduct on Public Property has a warning, does it?
Yeah, you're warned, and then you have to comply. If you don't comply, then they can hold you. And one thing I wanted to say about that is that this is, it's by definition not a crime because it's an infraction. So it's not actually a crime, it's just an infraction, but it's a $160 infraction.
Well, actually, I've always said infractions are one of the three levels of what are actually crimes, in the sense that they do have the option to jail you if you don't go through a certain process. But it is true, theoretically, and in fact it is true if you are to pursue this to the limit, and you should if you have the time, energy, and legal expertise or access to legal expertise, that if you are arrested or stopped for an infraction, you can't suffer a jail sentence as a penalty. That is to say, a judge cannot send you to jail as you're found guilty of that crime. However, as Sean Alini found out, I guess it was on Tuesday evening when he was arrested by police at his Feed the People meal, if you, for example, refuse to sign their ticket, they can arrest you. Or as the two youths with, I guess it was the Rainbow family, who had come to Santa Cruz on Monday night, were waiting for their fellow Rainbow folks to come up from San Luis Obispo with a van that had broken down. They had run around and feed people at different Rainbow gatherings. They were pursued, by their account, by officers Headley, Over, and Eveleth, and multiply stopped. Two of them were finally sent to jail. I guess their crime was failing to identify themselves in investigation of what I guess was something like a tie-dye shirt sale ticket. They were giving away tie-dye shirts for donations, but in fact they were saying that they, probably saying something to the effect that they wanted $5 or $10 for the tie-dye shirt. The idea that police officers would be sent to do this to kind of a roaming band of Rainbow people who are not engaging in regular commerce shows the kind of mean-spirited, get-out-of-our-town attitude that either the police or some merchants are taking towards one very important aspect of the community here in Santa Cruz. And in fact, I would say a vital aspect of the tourist community. What I'm saying, though, is that the reason these people were jailed, because they were charged with an infraction, was because they did not identify themselves to the satisfaction of the officers. They didn't have ID on them, and so when they were given an infraction ticket, the officers took them to jail saying that we can't be sure you are who you say you are. And it wasn't so much that they weren't sure of that, it was more that they wanted to, this is by the account of the people who were present, punish the entire group and frighten the entire group by taking two of that group to jail. One woman was put in juvenile hall, the man was taken to jail and then released later that night. He was released the next day. And they all took their case to city council, which I thought was a very brave and important thing to do. And for those of you who watched it on cable television on Tuesday night, around 7 o'clock, they spoke quite eloquently and simply about what happened to them and asked why are the police spending money and time going after people who are essentially doing nothing criminal, as Shaw's was doing nothing criminal by sitting on the statue of Scribner, as Sean Alini was doing nothing criminal by making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for hungry people who eat them by the dozens. All you social service providers take note as the social safety net is completely destroyed. And then, of course, the other side of it, the police officers themselves can violate the law with impunity and ignore when a citizen brings to their attention they're violating the same law. They might say, well, who cares? I might just put my foot in a planter. What the hell difference does it make? Which is true. But of course, they can use that to take innocent people to jail. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and I am going to give you a brief musical respite from this rather serious conversation. I think it is a serious conversation. Here's a cut from the San Francisco Mime Troupe's Rip Van Winkle, a great show, 10 years old, about a fellow from 1968 who awakens in 1988. Tune to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Pat Robespierre, Robert Norris, for the next hour and a half. Stay with us and join us at 427-3772. Be in the studio with us. Come in through the miracle of the telephonics and let us know what you think of what you're hearing. I went to City Council on Tuesday nights, as I usually do during the 7 o'clock session, to kind of give a piece of my mind to the Rotkin Matthews Council, as I call it, among other colorful terms. This council, you're going to hear more about their actions in the Beach Flats later. But I had a speech ready, which I'm going to read to you shortly, and I see an incoming phone call. Let's see what we got
here. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hello there, Uncle Robert.
Sir.
How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah, I was just listening to your show and listening about Chad's experience today and also Sean Lee's, some of his experiences he's been having. A lot of us have had, us poor people that can't afford a whole lot of stuff on the mall. Get hassled for this or that, but I don't know if you've noticed, if you've been along the river levees these days, they have signs about every 100 feet now telling us that we can't be between the outside of the bike path levee to the other outside of the bike levee. So anywhere in between that, which is the whole river area, is totally off limits during the dark time now because of the new, that's relatively new ordinance I think that was passed.
This was the river curfew ordinance pushed by a man I call Lebensraum Jim Lang, head of the Parks and Rec Department,
oh.
And supported by the so-called liberal city council think it may have passed 6-1 with only Celia Scott, the mayor, dissenting. It means that if you are standing near the riverside in that period, in that area you mentioned, which is anywhere, what, how many feet to each side of the river would you say it is?
Oh, you can't even be on the bike levee path itself, like the outer edge of the bike levee path. The signs are very explicit, and they must have cost a lot of money to make. They're every 100 feet, and they're double-sided. You know, nice metal, nice painting, little family here walking on the levee, and, you know, and then they have the levee in the river and the water, and make it really like, you know, an idiot can read it.
Right, well, you know, it is legal to cross the levee area. It's just not legal to stop, walk, linger, let's say stand and talk, unless, of course, you're an officer engaging in, surreptitious drug war type activity. I guess you found that out yourself, right, Bob?
Oh, yeah, I happened to ride through a little CNET operation on the levee. And it's kind of funny because you kind of all recognize what CNET and all the Netties and all them look like because they all wear the same thing. They wear these, what the hell are they, these shirts? The all black and white checker kind of flannel looking shirts.
Sort of gang colors?
Yeah. You know, and they're wearing their bulletproof vests under them, all that kind of stuff. I happen to ride through because of my previous run-ins with them. I got a ticket from CNET officer Gerald Haley for having no bike light going down the levee.
Well, they also confiscated your scanners for a time, and they...
Oh, that was the other incident.
Oh, another incident. I'm sorry, that was the earlier incident.
Yeah. I'm still waiting on a police review board for that one.
Oh, well, don't lose any sleep. Your hair is going to get pretty white before they come back to you on that one.
Yeah, I just got a letter from Gary Yamani saying it may not happen this time, but the next time, for sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
They're going to
be. Yeah, be advised, the Police Review Board does meet on Monday night, second Monday, actually, of every month, which means they'll be meeting, it's four days on this upcoming Monday.
Yeah.
And if you want to go in and observe the charades, or the follies, as I call them, it's always good to bring a whole bunch of people with you if you do, because otherwise they control you rather than vice versa. Now, I mean, let's put it this way. If you're going to go to a public meeting like that, it's good to make a good showing. It's at 5:30, and it's at the City Council Chambers. And again, this is the Citizens Police Review Board, which it's more like the Citizens Rah-Rah Police Board. It doesn't really engage in any real review. I think they've so far upheld one homeless complaint in 3 years, maybe two, I'm not sure, out of dozens and dozens. And actually, the Police Review Board was initially motivated by harassment against the homeless. It's an interesting situation.
Well, I just think that some of these little piddly ordinances, of course, that haven't really been challenged because, well, for one thing, we don't have the money to challenge them in higher courts. That's what's going to need to be done to change these laws. I mean, of course, people did change the law back in, 95 for people for sitting on the sidewalk.
94?
Yeah, although it did happen to turn into a pretty close to a riot. Windows were broken and that kind of thing. But that pretty much showed it to people's disapproval of that ordinance.
Mm-hmm. Which brings me to kind of a suggestion, Bob. I wanted to bring it up to you again. You may remember that, you know, we did a lot of protests in 94, and we followed those up in the fall with, I guess there was Insomnia Night in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, and you and I were arrested there together.
Right.
For essentially challenging the sleeping ban in a public way.
Right.
And there was actually a much larger demonstration earlier in September of 94 where the IWW came to town, actually held their convention in the street. Slept out that night. And what the police did, of course, was they ignored them.
Of course.
And then the next night they came back and arrested the handful of us who remained.
Of course.
Which is the standard operating procedure.
Oh, yeah. They don't want to have to face any numbers. They'd rather catch you all alone in the situation.
Now, you may remember that, it was on May 11th of 1994, the day that the police arrested dozens and dozens of us for sitting down at Cathcart and Pacific at the Food Not Bombs meal, when Food Not Bombs was serving there. And they took, 40 of us away, and then they gave up and stopped arresting us, and then they left. That was the first time I've ever seen the police give up and leave.
Yeah, actually, they declared it an unlawful assembly when the windows were broken.
Right, that was 2 hours later.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that that in order to get the police to take action, I think they learned from that mass arrest that it doesn't pay to arrest people. It just ties up their police power and time.
Yeah. Overtime.
So, unless they can use it to intimidate people who are, shall we say, isolated and operating alone, or people who insist on it. Now, Sean Halimi insisted on it on Tuesday when he was taken into custody for putting his foot on the planter. And, of course, the reason he was angry was because the health department had shown was harassing him. And more important, they were trying to harass his clientele. He felt he had to make a stand, say to the officers, put your money where your mouth is and see everybody. You can stand up to them. Yeah, they'll take you to jail, but they can't really take away your spirit and your right to say no.
Right.
So I've proposed for quite a while the idea of what I call stealth demonstrations. I don't know if you remember this plan. I brought it up a couple years ago. Since the police won't arrest a demonstration that's sitting down on the sidewalk, what you want to do is you want to catch the police in a situation where one person's sitting down, they think they can arrest him, and then suddenly everybody else sits down. And they're stuck with arresting everybody or engaging in selective enforcement.
Right.
So that's one of the alternatives I had.
That's an interesting way of
doing it. What do you think?
I think that might work, although they just might, you know...
Ignore everybody?
Yeah, they might ignore you. I mean, they tend to do that when people call for a mass demonstration. You know, they'll just ignore it and they won't be there. Or they'll have the little undercover guys there hiding out or something like that. But anyway, I just basically wanted to say that now that the town's more and more gentrified, sterilized with these new buildings, like that new Rittenhouse building with all the little gold bears around it and shit, there's going to be more and more of these ordinances, or at least they're going to start enforcing them more on the people that they see fit to enforce them on. And of course, the yuppies sitting outside Georgiana's on the sidewalk or whatever, on the curb, whatever time their shoes aren't going to be hassled. It's going to be the homeless person or, you know, anybody, low-income type people or kids.
Indeed. Hey, you were passed off here to the co-host.
Ah.
I just wanted to say, Bob, I saw that today. I was down there in the mall. I saw this attractive older lady, 45-50, dripping in gold and diamonds, sitting all sideways on the bench, all lean back with her hair falling over the side and her feet up on the bench, and the hosts are walking by and the cops are walking by. And I know if I was sitting on that bench like that, they'd be, excuse me, sir?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Me and my 3-year-old son were just bought a slice of pizza each, and we're sitting. There was nowhere to sit at the place of the metro, so we walked across the street to where Union Grove is, decided to sit on the curb there and eat our pizza that we had just bought, being consumers on the mall. And the cop came up and told us that we could be there. I told him, "Well, I'm a tax-paying citizen. You know, I have a job and all this." Said, "Well, there's a blanket law that says that you can't be here. You can't sit on the curb right there on the sidewalk near." And you're not, there's nobody you're blocking. They said it's a trespassing ordinance. I can be charged with trespassing for just sitting there with my son eating a pizza. So that was pretty clear that they just didn't like the way we looked. And I found it weird that they would hassle me and a child, but, you know, after all, you know, they fuck with me sometimes. But anyway, I'm going to have to go. But I just wanted to get my 2 bits in there.
Don't forget, it's a free country as long as you're paying cash.
Oh, yeah, if you can afford it.
Take care, Bob.
And this is Free Radio, 96.3 FM, your free radio station. Of course, the more money you send our way, the longer you'll be able to hear us because of the... we need, of course, cold cash to cover expenses, donations. We need your support. We were talking a while ago about the FCC threatening to close us down. That threat is not ended. The FCC continues to harass stations throughout the country. Free Radio Berkeley remains closed. San Francisco Liberation Radio, the two key stations in Northern California, remain closed. When I talked today to Emmanuel of Berkeley, an activist who I interviewed, but unfortunately that interview was lost because of defective tape recording equipment, he told me that Free Radio Berkeley, you know, was closed down except for the broadcasts on the internet, and I'm not quite sure how your average teenager is going to pick up on that one, or your average poor person. It's kind of hard to get access to the internet. He was surprised to hear that Free Radio Santa Cruz was still operating 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year for the last 2.5, 3 years. It's really quite something. It's not just one person or 5 people or 10 people. It's a whole community doing this, and we need the support of the broader community to keep doing it. you want to help us out, if you want to see what kind of resources you can contribute, if you want to show yourself on the air, give a call to our voicemail at 427-4523, 427-4523, email address frsc@cruiseio.com, frsc@cruiseio.com, snail mail, P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz 95061. And, of course, the studio calling line, if you have anything you want to say on the air, and don't be bashful, is 427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3. Let's have another musical interlude here. Stay with us and do not go away. Peter, Paul, and Mary, an ancient album reunion, which probably nobody ever heard, but I liked it, 1978, and the song is, looks like it's called Euphoria, but I could be wrong. Great song anyway. Well, at the Santa Cruz City Council, I was going to give a speech because, well, for those of you who've been following the beach boardwalk situation, the council is preparing to sell everything out to Canfield, giving him a huge millions of dollars in benefits and actual redevelopment funding in order to kind of kick off the commercial development of that area as the city council sees it. Who knows? Maybe to kick off some of their forthcoming political campaigns. I don't have any evidence that that's necessarily any financial kickbacks coming from Charlie Canfield, so it's not, it's just a thought. But the amount of double talk and promise breaking that's been happening around the beach south of Laurel plan is just breathtaking. And in fact, later in the show, I hope to contact Phil Baer of the Beach Area Working Group, and the, I guess he's also part of a couple of other associations down there in the beach flats. He's a landlord, he's a resident, he's an activist. He's been on the air before to talk about this. The thing that happened at the last city council meeting during the afternoon was that the council had previously slated three hearings for the beach flats stuff. They're trying to cram it all in before the election. One hearing on September 15th, one on September 17th, and one on October 20th. This had already been published. But now the council decided, or at least the five votes that are already committed, essentially, to the Canfield Seaside Company giveaway, decided they wanted to move it up to vote on it on the 17th. This is an incredible rush to judgment when the program has had such massive opposition, and there's so much discussion that really has to come out around issues as far afield as water, traffic, environmental concerns, the historical basis for maintaining this, the proper title to the land, the housing element, and the fact that 162, I think it's either 162 units and 200 to 300 people are going to be dispersed or have been dispersed already by this plan. It's just, there's a whole series of issues that have to be discussed, the effect on traffic to the whole community. All these issues have been brought up at the council and in no way answered or been the subject of real dialogue. And so instead of, you know,